NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots in their planes can have safer flights ahead. Well, hello there, Todd.
Hello there, John.
And we have, it's just you and I today. Greg is off someplace.
And you, fortunately, are in sunny, or at least warmer, Florida, as opposed to your hometown, which is under a blizzard condition here on the 23rd of February of 2026. For those of you who are watching this in the middle of a frozen landscape, you have our sympathies, but fortunately, we're not under any snow.
Yeah, I saw the weather and decided to stay in Florida.
Smart decision.
The NTSB has come out with an alert bulletin for ballistic parachutes. And it was only a matter of time before we would start having trouble with them. Not so much with this parachute, but with the fact that it's a device on the airplane that's constantly ready to deploy using an explosive charge. And we're now starting to see some problems with the airplanes on the ground, rescuers. And one of the concerns that I had that they don't really talk a lot about in the NTSB document is, you know, in a lot of our smaller airfields, before the emergency services could get there, because it may not even have a on-airport fire department, everybody in the airport would run out. And if they're not aware that there could be a ballistic parachute on the airplane, it could have some really serious consequences. So you did a good job of ferreting out the facts on this. So I'll let you read the story and we'll have some questions.
Well, this attracted me because this was a safety alert that the NTSB came out with in the early part of 2026. In fact, January 20th was when they had the safety alert. And the safety alert wasn't aimed at pilots as much as it was aimed directly at first responders, for the simple reason that once an accident happens, you have first responders in the area. As they pointed out, the NTSB pointed out, you have a situation where the ballistic parachute could fire off for various reasons. Could be that the first responder accidentally pulls the handle that initiates the chute, or because of the dynamics of the crash, when they're going into the wreckage, they might pull on the cable that's activating the chute. And in one case, and we have that video on the screen for those of you watching the video version of this, this is a view from the first responder's dash cam that shows a bunch of first responders standing around a burning aircraft. And they were apparently not in a hurry to get to the aircraft because it was still on fire. The ballistic recovery system explodes, and you see everyone run away. Fortunately, no one got hurt. Unfortunately, the people on board the aircraft were killed. That's the example of the hazard that we have here. Ballistic recovery system, which is a generic name of this, could deploy while the first responders are around. Those of you who are thinking, oh, this is only on Cirrus aircraft, not anymore. The companies that make this, and especially the company that makes it for the Cirrus, actually allows this to be used, and the FAA allows this to be used as an aftermarket add-on. So you can have any number of small aircraft, Cessna 172s, various kinds of light sport aircraft, various kinds of kit-built aircraft that could have this system. They highlighted the safety issues of this system with three different accidents, one occurring in 2016, another one in 2021, and one just over a year ago in 2025. Two of them involved Cirrus aircraft, and the third one involved a weight shift aircraft. We had a weight shift episode some time ago, and you'll see the screen grab of that, but this is a completely different dynamic. The ballistic parachute issues were different in all three accidents. Let me just start with the first accident and build a picture. There's a pilot, fairly experienced pilot. It was a commercial pilot, about 4,500 total hours, who, after a long layoff from aviation, had gotten back into getting certifications on light sport aircraft, powered parachutes, and he was getting a certification for a weight shift control aircraft, excuse me. He was trained over a course of about 13 and a half flight hours to get his training to be a weight shift control pilot, weight shift control instructor, and be ready to buy an aircraft. He had been looking at a fairly advanced weight shift control aircraft and got training in a more benign behaving aircraft. And painting another picture here, this is a person with extensive experience, not as just a pilot, but also as a flight instructor, also as someone who had run a flight instructor school. So you would think this is someone who has had experience around training issues, experiences around people who are new to aviation or new to a type of aviation. And he was in that position. He'd had 4,500 hours in non-weight shift control aircraft, 13 and a half hours in weight shift control aircraft, and he was motivated to buy a new aircraft. And this is where things get kind of squirrely. And John, from what you've seen looking at this report, what are the things that stand out to you, other than the ballistic parachute, about the situation?
Well, the first thing is just, decision making. I mean, he 13 hours of flying that airplane. It's different than a powered airplane, a Cessna 172, or any light airplanes like that. So it's a different animal. And I think he was hell-bent to get in something to fly it. I don't blame him. I mean, that's a lot that. That segment of aviation that can be a lot of fun, but you've got to make sure that you've gone through all the hoops and made all the right moves. And obviously, I think 13 hours may have been pushing the skill level a little bit. Maybe if he was a current 4,500 hour pilot, he might have been a little better. But it sounds like he wasn't in. And that means that his skills are a little rusty. So it would be right off the bat, the decision making.
There's other decision making that sort of, that I think contributed to this. One was from the manufacturer. The manufacturer was required to put placards on the aircraft stating basically this has a ballistic recovery system, a placard to warn anyone flying the aircraft, and of course, first responders that this potential hazard was there. Apparently, according to the report from the NTSB, sometime after the aircraft was manufactured and the placards were in place, they were removed for some sort of photo shoot. When the owner bought the aircraft, the owner had the placards in an envelope of some kind and was given that along with his other documentation for the aircraft. And he'd owned the aircraft for about a year, never installed the placards. So fast forward to after the accident occurs. Unfortunately, it was a fatal accident. And one last decision of the accident pilot. There was a shoulder belter of some sort that was available on the aircraft. According to the 6120 report, he did not use that. And if you're looking at the pictures of the remains of the aircraft, obviously it has some damage toward the front. It was a situation where there was a significant pitch up, apparently a stall right after takeoff. The flight lasted all of 16 seconds. And one would presume that, although they didn't say so, it crashed nose first. Don't know if the shoulder belt would have saved him, but again, decision making of the pilot. If you had the safety system in the aircraft, why wasn't he using it? That question wasn't addressed. Now, fast forward to the post-accident. You have the first responders there. One of the first responders laid open the possibility, hey, there could be a ballistic parachute on this. He was ignored. Well, I'm assuming it was a he. The first responder was ignored. Sometime later, an NTSB representative showed up and said that there might have been a ballistic parachute on board. That's when the first responders kept their distance and they found that there was indeed a parachute and it was deactivated. So, pilot decision making aside, the issue for the first responders was here's an aircraft that did not have required placards in place, and you had a first responder who opened up the possibility, hey, this could have a ballistic recovery system in it, and he or she was ignored. Obviously, this was not a Cirrus. This is not the common aircraft people think of as being equipped with a parachute. But as we said before, these can be put on as an aftermarket item for any number of aircraft, and weight shift aircraft are one of those kinds of aircraft that have this system.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make sense that he would not put those decals on or remove them. Just doesn't make sense. You know, we see poor decision making in many, many accidents that we review. We don't always talk about it because other issues come, you know, we want to emphasize other issues so we don't do a laundry list of issues over every accident. But this one, I think we're going to start seeing more and more of, and possible secondary damage, if you will. You know, what do they call that? Collateral damage, the military calls it. We're probably going to start to see some collateral damage of first responders and other people, good Samaritans, that try to get people out of a flash. A crash, run out to the airplane quickly because it's on fire. And I mean, I have a friend of mine that did that for an airplane crash in his backyard. And the airplane was on fire, and he was able to get the person out of it that was stunned and get him away from the airplane. And I have another friend of mine that on a highway crash, car was on fire and went in and pulled kids out of the car. So, I mean, firstly, good Samaritans tend to do that. And with ballistic parachutes that are in the general public's not going to know about them. So that's going to be a hazard, big hazard for the good Samaritan. And without decals, it's going to be very hazardous to the first responders. And even with decals, that is a level of hazard in there as well. Like you said, just opening a hatch or pulling on a cable could deploy it.
Hello, aviation enthusiasts, safety professionals, and curious minds. Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. We are thrilled that you dropped by. Here, we dive deep into the world of aviation safety. From incident investigations and technical analysis to lessons learned and what they mean for safer skies. As a member of our channel, you get exclusive member-only perks, first access to new episodes, live stream discussions, and Q&A sessions. We are a community of fellow safety detectives who love aviation as much as you do. If you're passionate about aviation or just curious about how things work, we'd love to have you on board. Hit join, ring the bell to be notified, and jump into the discussions in the comments. Strap in, because together we're going to explore aviation safety like never before.
Now, in contrast to the first event where there was decision-making issues all around, the second one from 2021 involved a Cirrus over Arizona where the pilot took off, was at 10,000 feet, encountered an engine problem, and realized that they had to get the aircraft on the ground. They were descending toward a glider port. The pilot decided he probably couldn't make it to the glider port, and he waited until he was at 2,000 feet, apparently following the recommendations of Cirrus. He pulls the ballistic parachute, doesn't go. He made alternative decisions, landed on a dirt road, just off a dirt road, and he and his passenger were able to get out okay. Turns out that the parachute system had a failure in it where it activated, tried to activate it rather, and it didn't go. And this is one of those unusual cases where you have a failure of a safety system. That failure did not lead to the people being killed, and they were actually able to get a full statement from the pilot. And we've had other situations before where, at least one of the ones we've talked about in the past, where there was a ballistic parachute in the Cirrus. The pin was not removed. The person, pilot, tried to initiate it, but was unable to because the lock pin was still in place. And for the first responders, the same sort of situation. You have a plane, and we have a picture of it on the screen, largely intact, but you still had a ballistic recovery system there, and it could initiate if the first responders aren't careful.
Well, if there's a little fire, it thermally could deploy. I mean, and we have an accident like that. The one you mentioned, I think, where the fire had it thermally deployed, a rocket deployed.
And that's going to be our last one on the list, which is a 2025 accident where unfortunately the aircraft crash caught fire afterwards and both people on board did not survive. And again, putting the video up again, you have a situation where they're standing around, it goes boom, they run away. Luckily, nobody got hurt. But it just goes to show you that not only with Cirrus aircraft, which was the case with this last one, but any other kinds of aircraft that may have the system on it. And a first responder, if they're coming to an aircraft on fire, if they're placarded saying that there is a parachute on this aircraft, they may not be able to see it. But the key here is, and I think what the message the FAA, excuse me, the NTSB is trying to say here is that there are a variety of issues with these systems when it comes to first responders, and care has to be exercised. And in my opinion, I'm not a first responder, I've never been one. But if I were to read this report, I'd say to myself, I should treat any small aircraft crash, assuming that that's one of the several issues, along with fuel spills, etc., that could impact my safety and the safety of others around me. And the NTSB also has a poster, which I believe they intend to have posted around firehouses and police stations and airports, etc., where first responders might see this basic information about ballistic recovery systems so that they don't fall victim to something like this.
You know, aviation is risky. And here we go with something that nobody expected. The ballistic parachute on Cirrus is a great idea. Using that parachute on a whole bunch of other airplanes, especially training airplanes like the Cessna 172, I mean, makes a lot of sense. And it has the potential of saving lives, but it's also risky. And there's no easy answer to it. I would like to see more ballistic parachutes on more airplanes because it's going to save lives. But it would be a tragedy if we had a ballistic parachute on an airplane that cost a first responder or a good Samaritan because they weren't aware of it. So it has somewhat of a double-edged sword.
And this is the case with any change to an aircraft, even if it's a safety system to make it less likely that certain events happen. Whenever you put a new system or a new set of procedures, new hardware, new software, the possibility exists that there could be other hazards introduced by this that aren't so obvious at first, may not be evident until there's been some experience with using these. And these parachute systems have been around for a while. I'm not aware of any events where that system cause injuries or deaths to a first responder or anyone else after a crash. But like John's saying, in time, this might be an issue. And for the pilots here, obviously, two of them did not survive, so they were not there to inform the first responders of what's going on. But one of the pilots did survive, was uninjured. I don't know if he informed them when they arrived, "Hey, I got a parachute on board." But for those of you who do have a system like this on your aircraft, if you're in an incident, doesn't matter what it is, and you have first responders there at your aircraft, inform them of anything that they should be aware of, whether or not you weren't able to cut off a system, whether or not you have a parachute on board and that it's still active and could be accidentally triggered if you accidentally pull the handle. So that's the takeaway I have from this. And another takeaway, or rather another message I forgot to mention, was the fact that we have members, people who have joined the Flight Safety Detectives. We appreciate all that you do by clicking on the subscribe button, and you can see the graphic I'm putting on board on the screen right now. You can go to the YouTube site and join, and at whatever level you think is appropriate. And even for those who don't join but want to get in touch with us, flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. That's right, flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. Make sure I pronounce that right. Send us your questions. Send us your comments. Even if it's not about ballistic recovery systems, we'd like to hear from you. And for you sponsors, or potential sponsors, I might say, imagine you getting close to our audience. Imagine you engaging with a clientele that is obviously engaged in aviation and aviation safety. You have a product, you have a service, you have a message. Come to us. We'll figure out how to connect our audience with what you have to offer. And I think I
Okay.
already did my second to last word, so it's like time to go to the last word.
And as usual, because these accidents involved with just what I'm going to say to you have not gone away. If you're going to go flying, you need to do a good job of pre-planning. We still find a bunch of accidents because the weather was disregarded, not given proper weight, maybe not fully disregarded. So you need to know the weather, where you are, where you're going, and what's going on in between. When you get to the airport, you need to do a good pre-flight. So many accidents have a poor pre-flight in the string of, but the chain of events that lead up to the accident. So you need to do a good pre-flight. And Todd has a good story that he raises every once in a while about an airplane that he was flying that had a wing replaced. And all of that raising questions before he went flying. So you really need to pay attention to all of it. And we just somebody just criticized me for fuel because I was saying that maybe we ought to just be filling the fuel tanks. And well, he said the criticism was that some airplanes are 100 gallons. Why do you want to carry around all that extra fuel? Well, the only reason why I say it is because we're running airplanes out of fuel. And I'm going to go back now and I'm going to start counting them. But considerable number, considerable. So I guess they're not gauging their fuel properly. So that's why I started to say fill the tanks. Now, I don't want to fill a tank on a big 300-gallon fuel tank, but usually those airplanes are not used for recreational flying. But if you're flying little Cessnas or Piper or any one of them small single-engine airplanes, I mean, you got to keep your tanks full, especially with condensation. You're going to get water in the fuel, less water in the fuel if the tank is full, and less problems when you're flying, running out of fuel. And selective is the other one. I just read another one just about a week ago, where the selective valve was miscued. He ran out of fuel on approach and crashed just on the edge of the airport property, a fatal. That was a really painful one to read because he was almost home and he didn't even know what had happened. The engine quit. He didn't even have a chance to respond to it. And another one that I just read recently, just to throw it out there with the fuel, is that The person moved his fuel lever from one tank to the other and overshot it and turned it off. 2 minutes later, the engine quit, and he didn't know why it quit. Before he figured it out, it was too late. You really need to have all your senses on high when you're flying. And after you get up in the air, we have the most recent hazard that's been popping up, and that is a lot of airplanes in the air, a lot of them with student pilots. So you need to put your head on your swivel. You need to know what's going on around you when you're flying, especially in and around airports where there's a lot of student activity. And with that, please, please fly safely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetodetectives@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
For decades, Avemco Insurance Company has been an advocate for pilot safety by promoting and sponsoring continuous pilot training and education. One of their initiatives has been to reward pilots who actively participate in being more proficient with savings on their insurance premium through the Avemco Safety Rewards Program. Pilots save by earning new ratings, getting recurrent training, participating in the Fast Team Wing program, and listening to podcasts like ours and other Avemco-related courses and training. Call 888-879-0389 for a free quote or visit avemco.com/flightsafety. Don't forget to tell them the Flight Safety Detective sent you for an automatic 5% off.